you cannot run a power system you can't see or control. Even in renewables, like obviously, you know, a nuclear power plant, everybody would understand. Like if I can't control the reaction, I have to shut it down. But it's going to be the same for any of these things because I have to be able to control, you know, the grid. It's a bigger system than just that one side. It's not just the solar panel that's on your house. It's tied into the grid. So we're dealing with phase and all these very complex things I don't even fully understand. And I've been in this industry for a long time, and I probably understand it better than many that are in this space.
You're listening to Protect It All, where Aaron Crow expands the conversation beyond just OT, delving into the interconnected worlds of IT and OT cybersecurity. Get ready for essential strategies and insights. Here's your host, Aaron Crow.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Protect It All. I'm your host, Aaron Crow. Today, another solo episode. I wanted to dig into something I think ever single OT person in OT security needs to be paying attention to. On December 29th, 2025, which is what, 2 days before New Year's Eve, and in the middle of the night, there was a coordinated attack that hit Poland's energy grid. We're talking 30 wind farms, solar installations, heat and power plants impacting, you know, what, 500,000 people. It bricked RTUs and corrupted firmware and HMI data was destroyed. And this wasn't some, you know, script kiddie. This wasn't just a kid messing around. This was sophisticated, deliberate, and destructive operation. Obviously, this is not, you know, US. This is not, you know, NERC SIP. But the tactics of vulnerabilities, the types of assets that were hit are the same types that would be no matter what the country is, whether it's the US. It doesn't matter, right? The power, the capabilities, the systems themselves are the same, really across the board. So every country, every sector, you know, even CISA says, you know, they put an alert February 10th, essentially telling U.S. critical infrastructure operators to pay attention because this could happen here. So let's break it down. What happened in Poland, kind of attack timeline. So basically what happened on December 29th, 2025, coordinated attacks hit the Polish cyberspace across multiple sectors. The primary targets were more than 30 renewable energy farms. Like, how many of those do we have? I've been to those types of places, and they are not, you know, physical security like you would have in a nuclear plant, right? It's completely different. But those, you know, renewable energy farms, think wind and solar, along with, you know, major combined heat and power plant that serves nearly 500,000 customers, private manufacturing company, CERT, Polska, Poland's computer emergency response team. CERT published a detailed incident report on January 30th, and they compared the attack to deliberate arson. That's what it said in their report. The attackers targeted power substations, the grid connection points, like, you know, the substations outside of power utilities where they generate it from, you know, transmission and distribution, et cetera. And these grid connection points, you've got all the OT equipment, you know, RTUs, you know, relays, SCL equipment, like whatever the make and model, I'm not sure, but the local HMIs for visualizing operational status, protection relays, serial ports, modems, routers, network switches, like all the things that are at a distribution center or distribution system, substation, et cetera. Once they were in, they conducted reconnaissance. They mapped out network devices themselves that they had access to. And then they prepared their destructive actions, right? They damaged firmware controllers, deleted system files, launched custom-built wiper malware. CERT Polska identified two primary wipers, Dino Wiper and Lazy Wiper. An interesting detail that they say that they suspect that the Lazy Wiper's core wiping functionality was developed using large language model, which is, as we've talked about with AI and the risks of it, adversaries are, you know, bad guys are using AI as well. We know this is going to be the case. They're going to have these devices, but they can even learn on the fly. So they can say, hey, we're seeing this thing. We can use AI to help them move faster and, you know, live off the land. The specific devices compromised, I don't want to dive into exact specifics of things, but again, all the types of things, IDs, RTUs, you know, serial port servers, HMIs, domain controllers, controllers, network switches, like all the different things. The attackers used, you know, automated targeting, shared configurations. They're really going after these things. They factory reset firewalls and Moxa devices, and they changed IP addresses and passwords, and they changed firewall rules, and they overwrote disks and deleted files. Like, they were just causing havoc on absolutely every system they could get into. They uploaded corrupted firmware to RTUs that caused, you know, reboot loops, things that were, you had to go repair them, right? They were broke. Let that sink in, like field irreparable. You can't even fix these things on site because they are in this loop. You're going to have to replace these devices. And we know supply chain is an issue with a lot of these types of things. It's not something you can just go to Best Buy or Walmart or something simple, or even your vendors that own these things. They may not have them, especially if you think about this at scale. Right. If this happens, how long will it take you to get that device, get it in a technician's hand, get it to site, get it replaced, et cetera? How much is that going to impact downtime? So here's the critical outcome, right? It's the power didn't go out. Renewable energy systems, you know, continued producing electricity, but the operators lost ability to see and control the systems. CISA said it clearly. The malicious activity caused loss of view and control between facilities and distribution system operators. They destroyed the data on HMIs, they corrupted system firmware and OT devices. The system operator could not control or monitor them according to their intended design. So what happens in those situations? And I've been in those, not from a cyber attack, but even if it's just, hey, a system goes down, the network goes down, whatever, the operator is not going to continue running those things. They are going to safely shut those things down because they can't control them. If I can't control it, then I can't allow it to continue running because it could cause problems. It could break things. It could hurt people, right? So I want to pause here because I know some people read that and think, well, you know, the power stayed on. What's the big deal, right? I think most of us probably that are listening to this can see the difference, but maybe if not, right? That's the wrong takeaway. You cannot run a power system you can't see or control. Even in renewables, like obviously, you know, a nuclear power plant, everybody would understand. Like, if I can't control the reaction, I have to shut it down. But it's going to be the same for any of these things because I have to be able to control, you know, the grid. It's a bigger system than just that one site. It's not just the solar panel that's on your house. It's tied into the grid. So you're dealing with phase and all these very complex things I don't even fully understand. And I've been in this industry for a long time, and I probably understand it better than many that are in this space. All this to say, you can't respond to faults. You can't fault. You can't balance loads. You can't coordinate with the distribution system. You can't ramp up. You can't ramp down. All these are risky, so you can't continue to run. That's not the system work. That's that they got lucky. They didn't tip over the right domino that caused it to fail. So who's behind this? Attribution, right? So who did this? Poland's prime minister pointed to Russia. CERT Polska attributed the attack to a threat cluster they call Static Tundra, which also tracked as Berserker Bear, Dragonfly, and Ghost Blizzard. And all of those are linked to Russian FSB. Dragos assessed with moderate confidence that the activity aligns with their Electrum threat group, which overlaps with Sandworm, a GRU-linked operation. And ESET also connected it to Sandworm. So it appears, it looks like it's in the Russian intelligence agency responsibility, FSB, GRU, etc. For most of us defending these environments, it doesn't really matter. I mean, was it a nation state, which nation state it was? It's more about that it was a state level capability. It was coordinated, it was destructive, and it targeted the types of systems that we're responsible for protecting and maintaining. Every power grid on the planet has this exact same type of system. So if they can do it there, they can do it here. They can do it in the US. They can do it in Texas. They can do it on the East Coast. They can do it on the West Coast. They can do it in Canada, Mexico, you name it, right? It is the same across the board. That, you know, Sun Tzu art of war, we use our strengths as weaknesses and weaknesses as strengths. The strength is that we use the same types of systems across the globe. That makes us really good at using those systems and protecting them. But it's also, hey, I know if I can test in this space over here, I know I can do that same attack or that same thing elsewhere. That's terrifying. If you really think about that, right? And how can you scale that? How can you use that in other spaces? You know, getting into organizations, you know, this is professional. It's scalable. There's more and more of this. You can't just say, well, we've got a firewall or we could air gap this. Unfortunately, that's just not the case. Now, we've seen attacks on power grids before. Ukraine in 2015 and 2016, both attributed to the same family of threat actors. The Poland attack, though, is fundamentally different because it targets the, you know, distributed edge of the grid. Dragos CEO Rob Lee called this the first major attack against decentralized energy resources, DERs. which is the, you know, industry term for wind turbines and solar farms and battery storage and combined heat and power, smaller distributed generating assets, right? The things that are, again, not a big coal-fired power plant or large, big turbines with, you know, 1,800 megawatts or 1,000 megawatts or 800 megawatts. These are those smaller, you know, you drive through West Texas and you see solar farms and you see wind turbines. These are the types of things. There's not the same amount of protections around those things, because they have a lower risk. They're below the NERC SIP guidelines on many of those things because it doesn't meet the generating perspective or even the distribution, right? It's not high enough criticality to meet a lot of those criteria in NERC SIP and even business risks things, because it would take impacting all of those in an organization before it would really impact the system. But that's what you're seeing here, is like, if I can do it at one, they could coordinate that thing and go across all the solar plants, all of wind, all of the batteries. Like, that's where this thing scales, and it's where it gets real for everyone, right? DERs are not going away. Those distribution, smaller generated assets, every country is adding more of them. You know, energy transition is happening. I'm not talking about global warming or any of that type of stuff, right? It's just a matter of, hey, we're going to put resources and assets in these spaces, more wind, more solar, more distributed assets to connect to the grid. Right. You know, having a giant nuclear power plant in one place and having to run wires everywhere is not as effective, especially in other countries where it's easier to put in these smaller locations, these smaller grids, these smaller microgrids even. So these are going to be a bigger and bigger and bigger problem as we do these. And as we start interconnecting all of these things, that it's going to expand on these issues. And unfortunately, in many cases, the same level of cybersecurity investment is not put into those smaller sites as are in large centralized power plants, substations, et cetera, right? So, you know, the point here, Rob Lee made a good point in that he said Poland was actually somewhat fortunate that the DERs make up a smaller portion of its energy portfolio than some other countries. Because if that had happened in the US, Australia, certain parts of Europe where they're more heavy, it could have been a catastrophic event. Imagine in Texas when it's a super hot and sunny day and a very large percentage of the grid is using solar, and it's a really windy day and they're using wind, and this type of thing happens. That's when you start having rolling brownouts and blackouts, and then you have to black start, or there's all sorts of bigger dominoes that come into that if those assets go down, because we've decommissioned so many old fossil fuel type plants that are bigger and running. So this can impact those things, right? So think about that for a second. If we're adding these distributed assets to grids around the world at an accelerating pace, and the first major coordinated attack against them just happened, it's not theoretical anymore, right? It's the new attack surface. It's growing every day. We're going to start seeing more and more of these attacks going after the things that we're not as focused as much on, using AI to get in for things that they don't necessarily know as much about. Something else happened in 2025 as well. Like in April of 25, Spain and Portugal experienced the largest power blackout in Europe in two decades. 60 million people lost power. In just 5 seconds, Spain lost approximately 15 gigawatts of capacity, 60% of its national electric demand. I remember I was at RSA speaking with a gentleman from Spain. In that moment, he started getting text messages because they didn't have power at home. Traffic lights went dark. Hospitals ran on generators. ATMs stopped working. Emergency services were impacted. I think 7 people died in Spain from outage related circumstances. And that blackout was not a cyber attack, to be clear. Investigators ruled that out. It was caused by a combination of technical factors, from generator failures and voltage control, all the things. It wasn't a cyber attack. But Spain's, you know, relatively weak interconnection with the rest of Europe. All of this to say, this is that collapse, analyzing this Poland attack. Imagine, so that wasn't even a cyber attack, but knowing that it's already at risk, knowing that it's an issue, these types of attacks in that space could have an expounding problem. So connect the dots with it, right? So the blackout showed us that modern grids, especially those with, you know, a high renewable penetration and limited interconnects, are vulnerable to cascading failures, right? There's a reason why everybody gives us a hard time. I'm from Texas. There's a reason why everybody gives us a hard time, because Texas is its own grid. Who you guys think you are? You know, we've had problems with our grid. Our grid's not perfect. There's a reason why the U.S. is not one big, large grid. It wasn't a mess up. Right. There's a reason why we have DC ties to the East Coast, DC ties to the West Coast, DC ties to Mexico. It's to stop a big incident from on the East Coast rolling out and blacking out the entire country. Right. It's by design. So we have to think about, as we're adding this complexity and adding these risks to our environment, and we're putting more dependency upon wind and solar and these smaller things, that we're not putting the cyber and monitoring and controls around. This isn't, you know, fear mongering, right? This is showing with real world examples of things that have happened that can happen and can happen here if we're not careful, right? So how did they get in? The basics, you know, this part should really like almost frustrate and motivate us, right? So the initial access came from, you know, vulnerable internet edge facing devices, specifically exposed firewalls and VPNs. I know I sound like a broken record. How many times I've been to this site and seen this and seen that, right? We have firewalls. They have any rules, or we have a firewall that's on the edge that's allowing access directly to an OT environment. Many of them lacked multi-factor authentication. Many were running unpatched firmware with known vulnerabilities. You know, once inside, I just did an episode about east-west monitoring, right? And we're putting so many OT sites are putting all of their security around this north-south at that firewall, and they're not monitoring when they get past that. But then we also have lacking multi-factor authentication, unpatched firmware, known vulnerabilities, and those are the things that are providing the north-south monitoring and protections. Once inside, they're able to pivot. They're using default OT credentials. Like, we know these OT spaces are vulnerable. We know we're using default credentials. We know we're not patching our systems. We know we have old, antiquated, old technology running at Windows XP and older systems in these spaces. These had, you know, RTUs and Moxa serial servers with default credentials. Attackers exploited default password on internet-facing devices, gain access to critical OT infrastructure. CISA specifically called that out, right? Threat actors leveraged default credentials, a vulnerability not limited to specific vendors, to pivot onto HMI and RTUs. So look, we've been talking about default credentials. We've been talking about exposed edge servers. We've been talking about multi-factor authentication and segmentation and monitoring. Like, all of these things we know are a problem in every, damn near, excuse my language, every OT space that we have, right? We know that if somebody gets in, there's no limitation in what they can do, right? We know that we don't have encryption on these protocols. We know that an RTU, a PLC, these devices will respond as long as you understand how to speak to it. And with AI, you don't even have to know. You could just say, hey, this is this type of device. How do I talk to it? What language? What protocol? What are its common commands? How would I tell this PLC to turn on, turn off, speed up, speed down, open or close? So here we are with state-sponsored threat actor walking through the front door because somebody didn't change the default password on a firewall or didn't patch it or didn't update it. And it's basically like just leaving your front door wide open and saying you've got an alarm system that's not armed. So look, I get it. There's reasons this happened. You know, nobody's perfect. These are lessons learned. These are not to point out or point fingers and say you guys are stupid or none of that. Right? It's all about what can we learn from this? Like, what is the RCA, the root cause analysis of this? How do we make sure this doesn't happen again? These are often remote sites. They're managed by integrators and third parties. Devices were installed years ago. Nobody went back to harden them. There's no dedicated OT security team. The engineer's responsible for it. They think the IT guy's responsible for it. They think somebody else is responsible for it. Like, you know, but a lot of times the engineer has many hats. Like, they're responsible for making sure the plant runs, but they're also supposed to be responsible for the security and locking it down and passwords and secure remote access and all these types of things. And it's not their expertise. They're engineers. They're an operator. But we're putting all this expectation because we don't have anybody else to take the baton. Who can do this? Well, the only person there is Bob. Okay, Bob, that's your responsibility. But Bob doesn't know how to do it. So he does his best. He gets help from vendors. He gets help from contractors, consultants, whatever. But still, we're not doing it enough. We're not understanding that these things are such big risks, right? So Dean Parsa, I just had him on my podcast the other day, right? Understanding the operational reality, but understanding why it happens doesn't excuse it continuing to happen, right? We can't just continue to have these problems knowing that we're not patching, knowing that we have these old systems, knowing that we have vulnerabilities in these spaces, knowing that we're not monitoring on these things. It's not enough. Like, we have to start putting more focus in these spaces, especially at a power utility, especially at these types of places. That's the place where the focus should be. Yeah, we're locking down your laptop. We're locking down the exchange server and the web front end. You need to do all those things. I'm not saying you shouldn't. But how are you not spending as much time or more money, more focus and people, resources, people, process, and technology in these OT spaces, which are the things that actually run the thing? The critical factor here was poor network segmentation. It was lack of passwords. It was lack of updating a system, right? And who owns it? Who's responsible for it, right? And one of the cases that the attackers had long-term data theft going back to March of 2025, 9 months of access before the destructive phase. The good news is they had an EDR system, and that EDR system actually blocked Wiper malware, right? So the defensive tools worked when they were in place, but at the renewable sites, the wipers executed successfully. So the lesson is that we're doing some of the right things, but we have to do it everywhere. We can't just pick and choose. You know, NERC-SIP is focused on, you know, medium and high assets. You look at a low asset, low generating site, which all of these would have been, if even that, there's almost no requirements. There's very minimal requirements at a low site to do very much of anything. And if you're only doing the bare minimum to check the box for compliance, then you would have had none of these controls. You would have had no EDR system whatsoever. You probably aren't monitoring. You have a firewall, but maybe nothing else. You're not required to change your password on some regular thing. You're not required to have MFA. You're not necessarily required to segment your networks, right? You're not doing any of those types of things because you don't have to. Nobody is going to fine you if you don't do it. I think this is a showcase of that you do have to. There is going to be financial impact and reputation impact, because if a bad actor gets in and shuts these things down, you're going to lose money. There's going to be fines associated with it. There's going to be potentially damage and life lost, both employees and customers and, you know, just the public. So CISA's response and kind of the regulatory signal. On February 10th, CISA published a security alert specifically about this event. And they didn't just echo CERT's findings. They used this as a kind of a launching point to push several, you know, important messages to the U.S. critical infrastructure operators, right? So first, vulnerable edge devices remain a primary target. CISA has now issued a binding operational directive, which requires federal agencies to inventory and remove end of support edge devices. That's routers, firewalls, VPN concentrators, et cetera, whatever those perimeter devices are, because they've become the number one entry point for OT attacks. Obviously, right? Unless, you know, I'm walking somebody in or I have something that's going around that, you know, that's going to be my main focus of attack. So federal agencies have 12 months to comply. You know, while they technically only apply to federal agencies, they're a signal. When CISA puts out a directive like this, the private sector should be, you know, thinking about reading that into this is where the regulation is heading. Secondly, OT devices without firmware verification capabilities can be permanently damaged. Right. So this is what happened in Poland. Attackers uploaded corrupted firmware to the RTUs and those devices became bricks, worthless. I mean, we've all updated a firmware on a laptop or some device that says don't unplug power. If you upload the wrong thing to it, it's going to brick it and sometimes not recoverable. Like these could not be recovered in the field. I'm sure you could send it back to the manufacturer and they probably have a workaround. But again, remember we talked about this earlier. The guy in the field is probably not a hardware expert to be able to do these things, right? So CISA's telling operators to prioritize updates that enable firmware verification. And if that updates aren't immediately feasible, you know, you need to have an IR plan to account for the possibility that devices may permanently be destroyed. What are you going to do if one of your devices in the field is not recoverable and you have to replace it? Are you going to have them on hand? How many are you going to have? How are you going to get them into the right space? Are the people trained on them? Like all this type of stuff, right? And lastly, you know, third, you know, change your default passwords. Like something I shouldn't even have to talk about, or we shouldn't be talking about, or we shouldn't even be having an issue. But you need to immediately require your integrators, your OT suppliers, everyone to force password changes as part of their deployment process, right? If your vendor deploys something and it is whatever the password, even if it's a super complex password, whatever they put it in as, change it right after they leave. Or before they leave, because I promise you, they're using that same password everywhere they go. Maybe not all of them, but many of them. I bet there are sites that I could walk into from when I was an asset owner back in the day and probably have a similar password. There's probably been plants that I've been to that the password that's written on the wall that was there 20 years ago is probably the same password it's still using. And that's a problem. It's basic hygiene. It's the difference between, you know, a bad guy walking in and being able to have full carte blanche and them actually having to fight for it, right? A lock on my front door does not stop a bad actor from getting in. It's going to slow them down a little bit though, right? If they have to pick the lock and I've got a decent lock and I've got two locks and then I've got an alarm and then I've got, you know, a dog, all of those types of things are just going to slow them down. And then you add monitoring on top of that, then you can potentially respond before it gets bad. They're not in there for 6 months playing around before they actually do bad things. So UK's National Security Cybersecurity Center also weighed in. And one of the operators of the UK national infrastructure said, we must not only take note, but act now. This is becoming the global message that's going out. Everybody's saying the same thing, right? Fundamentals matter. The threat is real. And the time to act is now. It really has been a while back, right? But, you know, anyways, the point is, right, we've laid out what happened. You know, you've heard me talk about this. You know, Dean Parsons talked about the SANS five critical controls. You know, what are those five controls? The reason that Dean harped on it so much, I just had an episode not too long ago. So if you haven't listened, go listen to that. But, you know, ICS specific incident response plan. Do you have a response plan for your system? If this RTU goes down, is unrecoverable, what are you going to do? Right? Do you have a defensible architecture? Is it segmented? Do you know how to make sure that things are blocked from the outside? I don't have my firewall directly on the internet, like all these types of things, right? I have ICS aware firewalls. I'm monitoring things. I've got secure remote access. I've got proper vendor access. I've got, you know, limited accounts. My corporate account can't get me into my OT environment. Like all of these things are here. Architecture matters. Even if the bad guy gets in, but he's blocked into this one place, I'm going to more likely notice him before he gets to the next place, he or she, right? ICS network visibility and monitoring. It's a huge one. And I just did an episode about, you know, NERC SIP and how they're doing East-West, SIP 15, right? This is a big concern because, you know, these are renewable energy sites that would not have been part of SIP 15. So SIP 15 is a great thing. We're rolling it out medium and higher. We would not have been rolling this out for SIP reasons in these spaces. So we would not have had East-West monitoring in any of these spaces. If you have network visibility, packet captures, network monitoring, traffic analysis, you have the ability to detect these things, detect anomalous traffic, right? See when things are happening, when things are being weird. A lot of this stuff, it also gives you asset inventory, understands the protocols. You can actually look at and come back and understand what's going on, potentially monitor, and then know what's going on, right? And be able to respond. Control four is secure mode access. I harp on all of these, but secure mode access is a huge one. We need, especially because we have less and less folks that we can have in the field. These sites are in remote locations that I'm probably not staffing with a full staff, but I need to be able to manage these things remotely. I have to do that securely. So I have to have multi-factor authentication. I need to be monitoring everything that's going on, session recording, you know, all of these things. Remote management of these, you know, remote locations is huge. Even when I had big power plants in my, but I had a team, a small team. There's no way I can have a person at every site. I had 40 something power plants, I had a team of six. How do we cover that? We have to be able to remotely support them. Well, you have to do that in a secure way. And then, you know, risk-based vulnerability management. We know that this attack came through vulnerabilities in firewalls. Not 0 days, known patchable vulnerabilities that they didn't patch. And this is an issue at every site I've ever been to because I have more devices than I have people and ability to do it, right? Some of these things on the firewall, turn it on auto. Yeah, I know, I said it. Update your firewalls. If that's your first line of defense, make sure it's the most strong. You know you're not going to patch your control system every day. At least patch the things that are patchable. Your FortiGate, your Palo, your whatever firewall you're running, patch it daily, hourly, as often as possible. Have redundancy so I can patch one of them, test it, make sure it's working, roll it over to the other one, and then patch the second. Right? This is not complex. We've been doing this in IT for decades, and we do it without bringing down service. There's no reason we can't do it here. This also gets to, you know, one of the conversations that Dean and I had as well. I keep harping on him because it was a couple of weeks ago that we recorded this. But this is where the ties between your OT and your IT organizations are so powerful. Because your IT organization probably has a firewall team. They probably know and are testing firewall tests and patches and update, can help you with architecture and can help you with support and have the skill set to be able to manage and monitor these types of things. So if you're not using that team, you're missing out. Every single one of these controls is directly related to what happened in Poland. It's not coincidence. It's a reason why we harp on just the basics, the foundations of OT. When I go into most of these places or I'm making recommendations on architecture or how to get a site to the next place, 9 times out of 10, it's not AI. It's not super crazy, fancy architecture and technology. It's basic blocking and tackling. Give me an architecture. Give me an asset inventory. Make sure I'm monitoring. Have secure remote access. Change my passwords. It's not that hard. So if you're listening to this and you're chuckling with me or you're terrified, you know, know, make sure that you've inventoried at least your edge devices, every firewall, every VPN concentrator, every router on your OT network. Change your passwords, even if they're not default. I've said default a couple of times. Change the password. Now, just go through them, update them, have them on some regular cadence on absolutely every one of your devices. Yes, it's a pain in the backside, but it makes a difference. Enable MFA everywhere you can. Obviously, you can't necessarily do that on your OT environments, but you should absolutely do that on your edge. You should absolutely do that in your secure remote access environments. You should absolutely do that everywhere that you can. Review your incident response plan. Make sure that it has specific OT things in it. If I lose this field device and it's permanently destroyed, do the operators know how to run critical processes? This is where that incident response really overlays with, it is not a cyber-led incident response. Or maybe it is led by them, but it is not 100% all cyber tasks. In these scenario, yes, cyber initiated the problem, but now I've got physical OT-specific equipment that's failed. Most of your cyber incident response plans are not going to have an answer for what happens if I get to an OT system that fails. You're going to have to bridge that with the actual site implementation incident response plan. Disaster recovery. What happens when these devices go out? These sites are really good at recovering, but we have to make sure that we have a combined plan. They're all the parties are at the table talking about all of these risks and how do we get things back. You've got to get visibility in your OT network. And it can't just be north-south, as we're seeing, right? Once I get past that firewall, you've got to have something. Even if it's a Linux box with a hard drive plugged in and a SPAN port going to it, capturing packets. Like, it doesn't have to be expensive and complex. Raspberry Pi, like any number of things. Yes, I know, open source and Raspberry Pi, blah, 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 whatever. But it's better than nothing. But even if I'm monitoring and I'm getting the data, somebody has to look at it. This is where technology isn't always it is the answer, but I still have to have the people side of this. We talked about process, but we also have to have the people thing, right? None of this requires millions of dollars, but is going to have a millions of dollar impact on you if you don't do something, right? It doesn't have to have cutting edge AI. It doesn't have to be, this is foundational. It's practical. It's achievable, no matter what your budget level is, the size of your organization, any of that. And it's a difference between, you know, being the next headline or, you know, being the organization that it was the headline because it was, oh, we stopped this thing, right? There's a lot of great coverage on this. Dive into Dragos. Thank you, Rob and Dragos team, you know, for their, you know, annual review, which comes alongside with this Poland attack as well. Paints a clear picture. Go check those things out. Bad guys are targeting us. They're targeting OT. When I say us, I mean OT. And I don't care what country you're in. If you're a practitioner, if you're a protector, if you're in cybersecurity and you have OT assets, even if you're not the OT guy, you're still protecting these spaces. They're actively mapping control loops or understanding how to manipulate physical processes. AI, labs, eBay, I can get all this stuff. It's going to be more and worse, and it's going to happen more and more and more. I'm excited. I'll actually be at S4 this week. I'm sure a lot of us will talk about this week. This is not going away. We've known it's not going away. Unfortunately, it's just going to get worse. We're at that inflection point where, you know, it's creating a new attack surfaces faster than we can defend them. You know, the bad guys are getting more capable and willing to cause physical damage. With all the political stuff and wars and all that is going to drive more and more attention in these types of areas, whether it's in the US or Canada or overseas, Europe, Middle East, whatever. So always come back to this. It is doable. OT security is different. It's not harder. Those basic foundational things, the five critical controls that Sands and Dean and I talked about, change passwords, like do all those things, right? It is achievable. You don't have to have a massive budget. Maybe you need help. Bring in a consultant. Bring in somebody like myself and a million others that are out there that do this and have experience and can help get you very quick, right? Poland's grid survived this, but that's luck, right? It's not something that I want to risk in the future, right? So thank you for listening. Hopefully this resonated with you. Honestly, hopefully this scared the crap out of you. Share it with your CISO. Share it with your plant managers, your engineers. Share it with, you know, people that understand the threat landscape, the people that are fighting this fight, that are have been screaming this from the mountaintop and can't get the people, process, and budget to push to this, right? So definitely leave us a review on Apple, Spotify, YouTube. If you want to be a guest, reach out. If you're going to be at S4, come see me. Come say hi. This is February of 26. So it's S4/26. And y'all stay safe out there. I'll see you down the road.
Thanks for joining us on Protect It All, where we explore the crossroads of IT and OT cybersecurity. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to stay ahead in this ever-evolving field. Until next time.